I'm Lee.
I'm Spencer.
And this is the Lasso Lowdown. We give you the lowdown on all things Ted Lasso. We are marching our way through season two of the Apple Plus TV series Ted Lasso. This week we are on episode three, aptly titled The Rightest Thing. Spencer, before we jump into our segments, what were your initial thoughts of the episode?
I thought it was a solid episode that I enjoyed. I think it had a couple unnecessarily fumbled moments of execution that could have made certain things either better built up or more powerful. But I think it's really charting a... I feel like I say this with every episode, but this one really feels like it's charting what's going to be a big plot line for the next few episodes as people come to terms with and chart a way going forward from a very momentous decision that one of our characters makes.
Yeah, completely agree. We were texting a little bit about this. I think we were both big fans of the narrative from a like human fan, like just what does Lee think about the world perspective, but like also like as a person who's operated in the world and understands at least on some small level how it works, very worried about what was going to happen to Sam, the team, Rebecca, etc.
I love you and I were putting on different hats to explain our different points of view of where we're like, fan Spencer, wonderful, so happy for these characters, what an amazing decision, what a powerful message. Lawyer Spencer, oh dear God! Same thing with you, as being a guy who does so much work with contracts.
Yeah, corporately is like, I think I gave you a text that said prayer sign, dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign, like pray for the money.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really going to crystallize my view of this episode, is the degree to which they're confident of going into the necessary repercussions of this. Because they can play out the story, and I would love if they do it, of basically the Colin Kaepernick story of where the team actually had his back. Because that would be a wonderful story to see played out. But it would be entirely unrealistic if they don't go into what will be the necessary consequences, expense, and effort that would have to be put into place to make that actually possible.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, well, I can say that I really love this episode, and I am starting to develop a sort of perspective of this season that it might be better than the first season. What? What
did you say? Your damn
Stop
mouth.
It with the heresy. I don't know, man. I think it might be. Like, I like that the episodes are longer. I like what they're doing with the plot. I feel like that as great as the jokes were, they're tighter, they're longer, they're more complex this season. I'm really, really digging this season. But yeah, that's our initial thoughts. Before we jump into Spencer's recap, let's talk a little bit about the segments we do here on the Lasso Lowdown. We start with Biscuits with the Boss, where Spencer brings a dessert to the podcast. We do Tea Time with Lee, where I convince our American audience that tea is not quite as bad as Ted Lasso seems to think that it is.
Good
we
luck.
Jump to the recap with Spencer. That's right, Spencer. My guy Spencer leads the recap. We do train wreck of the episode, the Sports Center Top 10, where every week we point out to you 10. That's 10 on the nose. 10 exactly, not 9, not 11, things that we like about the episode, and we wrap up with life lessons with Ted. Some great life lessons in this episode, Spencer. Whoa!
Just a few.
Whoa, what a segment that one's going to end up being. Okay, and a little housekeeping here at the Lasso Lowdown. If you're enjoying this podcast, please go to whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, and please rate and review us. We're having a lot of people listen to the podcast, Spencer. That's really good news. Not many people are rating and reviewing us, so we don't really know what you guys are thinking of the podcast. So we really would like to hear some feedback from you all on how you think we're doing, because if there's anything we can improve, we would love to improve upon it, because part of the reason we're doing this is we want you guys to enjoy it. We want to have people listen and participate in watching Ted Lasso and enjoy listening to the podcast with us. So please do that if you have a chance, and if you like listening to me and Spencer gab, you can go to whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. Type in Mangum Talks, that's M-A-N-G-U-M, Mangum Talks, and the plethora, the bounty of our podcast will just magically appear for you, and you can select any one that tickles your fancy, and you can listen to us chat. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's the housekeeping. Spencer, I think it's time we get into segments. Let's go with Biscuits with the Boss. What dessert have you brought for us this week?
Well, I love to give our listeners ideas for what desserts they should enjoy with a given episode, because, you know, this is a comfort show. We want people to have their comfort drinks, they want them to have the comfort desserts, so they can enjoy the overall experience. We do the same here. For me, I couldn't get it out of my head after the first time I watched this episode with how many mentions of cheese that they were, but I haven't had cheesecake in so damn long of a time.
Ooh, I love cheesecake.
So, ordering Italian food last night, we also ordered a couple slices of cheesecake along with it, and as you can see here, it is delightful. Perfect consistency on the cheese. Crust for me is everything. Crust on a cheesecake matters so much. It's kind of like any kind of pie cake that involves a crust kind of thing. And Though it is, as we're recording, way too early in the morning to enjoy too much of this, I'm having some delightful bites and having quite a bit of fun.
Are you a big graham cracker crust guy on your on your cheesecake?
Yes. I don't need much. I mean, if you want to dribble sauce on it, if you want to mix it other things, fine. But if you just give me classic cheese filling and a great graham cracker crust, I will be very content.
I'll tell you how country I am in backwoods and basic. If I, in a vacuum, I'm not in polite company. I'm not trying to impress anyone. It's just me.
Definitely not here,
eating a slice of cheesecake. What crust do I want? Oreo crumble.
Oh, that is a good call. That is a good call.
The Oreo crumble.
Oreo crumble is classic. It is iconic. It is delicious. Always great.
And before we move on from the segment, when you say you ordered Italian food, just a quick clarifying question here. If you order pizza, you would never say, I ordered Italian food, right? You'd say, I order pizza. Italian food is like big pasta-heavy dinner, right?
No. I will then clarify my prior remark based on the new parameters that have been set. We ordered two pizzas, some garlic rolls, and some cheesecake.
Oh, wow. Okay, because I always would place pizza in a different sort of mental category. Like, if I say Italian, you can bet like it's like a, like I'm getting like gnocchi, sketty, like something like that. Like I'm not getting pizza. That's interesting that you would say I've got Italian food when you ordered a couple of pizzas.
We almost always do the same thing. We order one pizza that has just so many animals butchered on top of it. We order another pizza that has only veggies on top of it. We order a collection of garlic rolls, and then we eat those for like 3 days, and we're very happy.
There you go. All right, well, let's move into Tea Time with Lee. This week I have a different tea, I'm going to put quotes around it, quote, what? Tea variety for you than I've ever done here on the Lasso Lowdown. This week we are going to delve into hibiscus tea.
I put quotes
around it because hibiscus is a actual flowering plant. So it is not of the tea genus, right? There's like, as I've talked about before on this podcast, there's one tea plant, all black tea, all green tea, all white tea, which is really a variation on green tea, all stems from the same plant. Hibiscus does not. So very much like the South African rooibos tea that I talked about before, hibiscus is a type of flower, type of different plant than the tea plant that they actually dry and they make, quote, tea out of, but it's naturally uncaffeinated because it's not the tea plant, right? And it's very popular with folks as a very light tea. Again, it's something that you can have at night. The version I have is from a company called Buddha Teas, which I actually really appreciate. They're actually pretty price conscious. Buddha Tea is not very expensive. And this iteration of the hibiscus flower is deep red that I have today. So it's a very deep red looking tea. So I'm going to pour that here and have a little hibiscus tea and tell you all what I think of it.
Survey says,
it's good, man. It's really flowery. I'm not sure it's what you would want out of tea based on what you've told me.
No, not really. As much as people very much enjoy herbal teas and I understand the appeal of it, really a kind of flowery taste in tea is not my focus.
Yeah, no caffeine. It's not going to wake you up in the morning. It's probably something like, you know, you're at a nice bed and breakfast for yourself. But Spencer, let's pretend like you would pay for a nice bed and breakfast. So let's put yourself in a different mental category.
I understand Motel 6. How far removed is that from what you're talking about?
It's that, but get rid of all the people and make it nice. And you're sitting out on a nice porch or veranda, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You want a little something. A hibiscus tea will be good for you. Also, Spencer, there's a reason I picked hibiscus tea. Why did I pick hibiscus tea this week? Because hibiscus is produced in massive quantities and exported from the country of Nigeria. That's
well
right.
Well done, sir.
Hibiscus
very topical.
Hibiscus tea, very, very popular export out of Nigeria. So there we go. Hibiscus tea for you folks this week on Tea Time with Lee. Spencer, so go ahead.
Our comfort foods this week are cheesecake and hibiscus tea. Sir, we know how to treat ourselves.
Spencer, are we... are we about done with this amuse-bouche and ready to get into the main course?
At what point do you just actually start becoming Ted Lasso? Because as we've seen, both Ted Lasso and Led Tasso are just identities that can be take over a person. Are you worried that you may channel him too much by the time this podcast is done?
Touch your toes! Etch your foot fingers, ladies! Touch each other's toes!
It is already happening.
Let's do it, Spencer. Let's jump into the recap here for Season 2, Episode 3, The Rightest Thing.
While Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette plays, a song I grew up with, Ted arrives in Rebecca's office only to meet a new secretary at the desk. We have a new character on the show, Nora. Sir, initial thoughts. Nora as a character, what do you think?
So I don't want to steal your thunder here because you were talking to me a little bit before we started recording, but I actually did have the same independent thought that you did, which is this young, like really super with it, like smart beyond her years, you know, girl gets thrown into these narratives. It's a very popular trope. I oftentimes roll my eyes at it. I think I've even talked about on this podcast or a different podcast before, like sort of rolling my eyes at the idea that these 12 to 14 year old girls can be this smart. This one I bought, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because I just implicitly trust Ted Lasso, the show. Maybe it's because this actor acted it really well, which she did. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the writing was really good. But it's my thought on it is this is a trope. It's often overdone. It's executed pretty well in this episode. What did you think?
Perfectly said. I have nothing to add to that. That is exactly my thoughts. An archetype that I find inherently frustrating, but is played successfully here.
Yep.
Two of them immediately go into perfect Ted Lasso banter of where they start discussing concepts ranging from reincarnation to horse pee, as one does. While
it's pretty wild. Rebecca
and Sassy Smurf in her office are discussing the recent removal of her lower back tattoo and whether she misses it.
Shout out to Sassy Smurf for getting the back tattoo and then changing with the times.
As it is an impressive gesture on her part. What I find even more impressive is where the scene goes next, of where Sassy Smurf and Marble Man are reunited, and in a fascinating decision, the show decides to quickly skip like what could have been a season's worth of romantic plot drama or romantic plot tumor, and just reveal that of course she told Rebecca that the two of them hooked up, because of course she would. They're best friends.
Yeah, it's stinky.
It makes absolute sense. It throws away needless tension and drama the way the show loves to do unexpectedly, but it caught me completely off guard. Kudos to them.
So, the anti-friends? Are we calling Ted Lasso the anti-friends?
Are we calling them the anti-friends? I'll let you make this decision.
Well, remember we had a previous episode where you were like,
Oh, yes, I understand now.
You said other shows, this was one of the really great Spencer moments on the Lasso. I was so proud of you for this one. Because Spencer just goes, well, other shows would probably, you know, not have the characters tell each other that this happened, go about business as normal, and then eventually bring it back up like 25 episodes later, and it'd be this super dramatic thing, and everybody's mad that it wasn't vetted previously. And I was just like, Spencer, I think you're just taking a pot shot at Friends. And you were like, yep, that's pretty much it.
I'm kind of doing that again. This would be such a Friends plot line that they would have run with, is just, oh, when is this going to turn out? When is it going to happen? When's it going to be revealed? How is she going to react? And just keep that tension going forever. This is like, nah, that's not the story we're telling. It's done. They would have talked off camera, because of course they would have.
Yeah.
Kudos to them.
It's great. I really like that choice.
Ted jokes about whether Nora might be his, to which, you know, Flo does basic math and say that it's only been, it's only been 6 months, which I was I love they worked that in, so we now finally have a data point of how long it has been. 6 months. She also notes that Ted also didn't finish.
Okay, let's move on.
Moving on.
No need to talk about the science in front of the boss.
Sassy's apparently in town for a conference, and so Nora will be spending time with Rebecca to make up for the last 6 years of absence, which Rebecca seems really excited about. Ted starts to feel even more awkward as the conversation starts transitioning to the idea that apparently Nora's only one wayward cobblestone away from her first period, which awkward conversation
we're going to take part in. That's a really funny line.
That is a great line. So he leaves with a John Wooden reference to make each day your masterpiece.
TTFN.
This leads Flo to answer the question.
I'll tell you what I like about this scene, though, before you move on to the transition with Flo and Rebecca. I'll tell you what I liked is that, you know, we just keep getting moments of adults being adults, right? Like Ted and Flo hooked up, and he walks in, and it's not the sort of like what we see oftentimes in popular media where he like opens the door, sees Flo, runs away. Oh, I can't speak to her. It's going to be so awkward. What do I say? What do I do? Let's vet this for 3 episodes. Instead, he just walks in and goes, Sassy Smurf, good to see you. And
they just hug,
and they're just adults, and that's it. And I really just enjoyed it. It was a breath of fresh air for sure.
I feel like television has gotten so used to capping the emotional maturity of its characters at, like, not even senior-level high school, but, like, sophomore-level high school.
Yeah, for sure.
because everybody just inherently finds that funny and relatable. But it makes it an entirely unrealistic experience of how we either would hope adults would interact or how they actually interact. This show does not do that at all. It does lead them to now ask the question that both Rebecca and the entire fan base have been wondering, though. Was Ted good in bed? To which, apparently, he always talks like that, even in the sack. But he also was so eager to please, and it was fabulous. Ted good in the sack, confirmed. Rebecca, on the other hand, seems more than a little bit squicked out of the idea, and promptly spits up a biscuit, leading Lee and shippers everywhere to start crying as the show starts to dunk on the idea of that ship.
Not a good sign for my shipping of Ted and Rebecca, that Rebecca pukes at the idea. Although, I will say she asked the question. So, you know, let's see, let's make some lemonade here, folks, because she did was at least interested in how Ted performed in bed. I will say that the cold opening this week, 250, right in the middle. Not too fast, not too slow. Little Red Riding Hood situation here. No record for the cold opening.
As we return to later, the show is continuing to tease the idea that Ted may eventually find his perfect soulmate on this new banter program they keep throwing out. So they're at least leaving open the idea that there could be Ted shipping in the future. Maybe it's with someone that would never think of pairing with him before. Yeah. Ted's at a press conference and is, as usual, doing it by means of music and movie references, starting with Pat Benatar, Hit Me With Your Best Shot. And I love the journalists are so in with Ted now that they're proud of themselves when they get the references or they play it out correctly. So Lloyd's clearly like, yes, when he gets it right.
Never, ever have seen a coach command a press conference this way. I mean, it is...
Power Ted.
Unbelievable. I mean, like, I think the person I've seen command them the best probably ever is Greg Popovich from the San Antonio Spurs. And he's not even a rival for Ted here. I mean, he's got them, like, guessing goofy musical references and, like, almost, like, high-fiving him in the process. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's absolutely great. It's the power of Ted compels you. It's really impressive what this man's able to pull off with basically everybody around him.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Richmond's apparently heavily favored against Coventry City, the game they have next. Yep. And Lloyd asks, will you finally end your embarrassing streak of draws? To which Ted responds, oh, Lloyd, I've never been embarrassed about having streaks in my drawers. It's all part of growing up. As much as they love Ted, even they are like, I guess I have to write that one down as a quote. They roll with it. Trent Crim, the Independent, though, stands up and asks, and Ted asks, well, make like Dunstan Union and bring it on. Movie reference there.
I like that Trent doesn't really participate in this, though. Not like the other. He just kind of looks at him and goes, eh, okay. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, it's just like it's a polite nod and then moving on. He asks the key question of, you are well known for making a great environment in the locker room. Is Jamie, the prodigal son returned, going to disturb that? Ted says, he doesn't think so, that Jamie's on a path to becoming a better man, and Ted is just here to help him on that journey, like his own personal Mr. Miyagi with less yard work. We cut to the locker room, where Jamie, notably, framing conversation, is off by himself. The rest of the team is clearly having a wonderful banter. They're bonding, while Jamie is very much now outside of that team vibe, which is clearly quite close, unusually close, as Dr. Sharon mentioned before.
Yep.
Keely arrives to show Sam his new
knock,
Dubai.
Knock!
I love Keely's entrances. Everyone's immediately engaged with Keely whenever she walks into a room. Yeah, most people agree. She's here to show Sam his Dubai Air photoshoot photos. She offers compliments that confuse the hell out of Sam, but he picks up on the fact they're probably compliments.
You're a mantra.
I think it's compliments. Thank you. The rest of the team then circles around and does the kind of thing that close friends, particularly close guy friends, always do. They playfully rag on each other. It's the nature of a lot of very close friendships, and it's clear that that's what these guys are. Really close friends now. Jamie sees this dynamic. He clearly likes it. He clearly wants to participate, and so he offers his own what is meant to be playful criticism. It lands like a turd in the punch bowl, the exact same way Beard thought it would. It is a lead balloon. Everyone just turns and just looks at him utterly coldly at his intrusion in their friend dynamic.
Yep.
Jamie's immediately silenced. Doesn't have really anything to add to that. And then Keeley brings up the idea she's leaving that she really would like all of these young, hot footballers to sign up with her new program that she's kind of serving as an independent consultant contributor on. Banter. B-A-N-T-R. We get this name like dropped Grindr. Like, as Colin helpfully offers, which may be telling us things about Colin we didn't know. And I love that Colin is in no way embarrassed about saying that. It's not like this is an awkward thing. It's just like, oh, Colin might be gay or bi. Who knows? Not a big deal. Banter is name dropped, what would you say, like 12 times this episode?
Yeah, it is. It's obviously going to play an important role in the plot. I'm interested, though, that Keeley says to help this app get up and going, you know, having hot, you know, good looking footballers join will be helpful. I thought the whole point of the app, as explained later, is that there are no pictures and you can't make decisions on who you talk to based on looks at all. Like the whole interface is designed to stop you from doing that. Kind of a weird thing.
I think it's a weird thing, but I think it's a necessary recognition of the fact that that is always going to be a draw, even if it doesn't make sense. Having them endorse the product and having people know that they're on it will draw people in, even if it's kind of an anathema to what the nature of it is. But she only has so many tools that she can wield, and hot footballers are a necessary commodity that she has to bring to bear.
For sure.
As you said, it is name-dropped so much, it's clearly going to be important going forward. I have a theory about who maybe the new team sponsor might be. We'll see. Said Colin Casper.
New team sponsor?
Things happen. I know you haven't seen this episode yet.
Oh, okay.
We're going to go through it.
I see. You think Banter's going to be a sponsor of the team. Okay, gotcha.
I think they've referenced them enough that it would be almost odd if they don't. I think it's almost meets with some of the themes they're going with and some of the themes the show wants to represent and some of the things the team wants to embody. And we haven't had any other corporations mentioned to fill a gap that's clearly left by the end of this episode. So maybe. Ted and Beard arrive.
Can we talk about that? Because I know we're jumping the gun, but you've brought it up here, and I feel like I have a theory that's competing that I don't know how to shoehorn it in later. I think it's just natural here.
Please.
So we're basically talking about, okay, eventually the biggest sponsor they have, Dubai Air, is going to be pulled, obviously, because of the events in this episode. You're thinking Banter
at
might
minimum.
Step in. You think Banter might step in. I have a theory that Rebecca, who is basically saying two middle fingers up to her sponsors, is going to get, and we learn through Higgins that they're already in dire financial straits. She has money, but she doesn't have that kind of money. I think she's eventually going to have to turn to Rupert for help.
This is my other theory. I think Banter's not big enough. They're a fresh startup company. They're practically an IPO. They're not going to have the money to fill in for Dubai Air to sponsor a major sports team. Turning to Rupert, given that he's again name dropped in this episode and that we haven't seen him yet, and getting him more involved in a direct financial contributor, or even just using his corporate contacts to try to draw in other sponsors, feels inevitable and a necessary consequence of the very moral and ethical and right decisions that they've made. It's one of the things that they don't directly, it's one of the things they leave out of the quote in this episode, is that you should always do the right thing, it's not the wrong thing, but there you have to understand there are costs for it, regardless of what you do.
Yep, gotcha.
Ted and Beard arrive and try to start the team in training for the next game, which apparently will be borderline violent in physicality, in Beard's words. Man is a way of summarizing games beautifully. Jamie, though, interrupts to ask whether he can say something. He says, I know I wasn't the greatest teammate. I did some shitty things. I said some shitty things. But I want each of you to know that I'm truly sorry, and I'm ready to do whatever it takes to make it up to you. Yeah? Again, Jamie has made a lot of progress away from the team. Not in the view of the team. We know that he is a better, more complete, remorseful person in some of his past deeds than they have ever seen before. The team doesn't know that for shit, though. And so they, hearing what we might interpret as a legitimately, I'm humbling myself, I want to be better, I want to be better with you kind of line from Jamie, which seems well meant, clearly interpret it as just that much bullshit. And start to just lay out all of his sins.
How do I convince everyone I'm cool now?
We'll get that line later.
I actually do think Jamie's cool now, but it is kind of a funny thought of like, man, I've been an asshole for so long. I know that I've changed. How do I show everybody that I'm not an asshole anymore? Kind of a quandary, a little bit of a pretzel he's in.
There's a debate on the subject of buying everybody PS5s. I have a bit of a different view than Ted does on the subject, but yeah. We'll get to there.
Yeah.
What should you spend money on other than love, as Jamie discusses? But we'll get there. The team has said just starts to now lay out a few key examples of his misdeeds over the years. All of these notably happened off camera, all of which are reasonable in what we would expect of Jamie, but I don't think we've ever seen any of these before.
Called him a jaundice worm in Colin a piece of his hometown paper.
Which Colin clearly is struggling with. The idea that he is a worm is something that is stuck in his craw and will never leave. Bumbercatch, which I don't think we ever knew this. We've seen this player for the last two seasons. I think this is our first learning of his name.
How did you learn his name?
They said it.
Oh, they did? Okay, Jamie, I didn't catch that.
Jamie apologizes to him. I'm sorry, Bumbercatch. So,
okay, I'm gonna have to tell you that I do watch it with subtitles on, but specifically Keeley and Jamie, their British is a form of British that is really hard for me.
There are moments we have to replay every now and then. It's like, okay, Keeley was just speaking in the most high squeaky fast that she possibly could. Let's rewind that, please.
Yeah, and Jamie's tough too.
So it's Colin. John just wore him in the profile of his hometown paper. Sorry about that, Colin. Bumbercatch hit on his mom in front of his dad.
Ooh.
Apologize for that. Tell your father I'm sorry and give Janet my best. Which, I don't know if that makes it worse or it gives him kudos that he actually took the time to remember her name.
A little better,
I think, too. Richard, apparently, based on translation from Zorro, is pissed that Jamie cupped a fart and put it in his face because they are back in junior high. Jamie actually apparently remembers that and is sorry. Then we start just getting into a just run and a blur of things, some fair, some not. The least fair is from Isaac. You got us relegated. That one, of all of them, is bullshit. That one, in no fairness, can be put on Jamie. He did not get them relegated. He was playing well, he was getting some of their only wins, he got transferred against his will, and while playing for his new team, he got them a victory. That's not on him.
So I think you could come at it from a couple angles. One is you quite literally kicked the goal that got us to relegation. Unfair. I mean, what was he supposed to do? He's playing the game. The other one you could come in is that through your own actions, you got kicked off this team. Like, because you were so, so difficult here, and because we didn't have an ace, or our second ace, shout out Danny, football is life, our second ace, we weren't as good, therefore we got relegated. That one...
Also
maybe
unfair.
I think it's about 20% valid, about 80% unvalid. Then I would say that what was kind of left implicit in his comment, at least for me, is not necessarily that Jamie got him relegated, is that he, in an interview, bragged about wanting to do it. That part, I think, if I was in the locker room, I would really have taken issue with. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're playing. First off, you're an asshole. You got kicked off the team. You go back to Man City. You're playing on a better team. You're probably going to beat us and we'll go to relegation. You don't need to get in front of a microphone and say, yeah, it's going to be really great to send my old team back down to the Champions League. Like, that's a tough one.
He is with another team at the time. Players constantly talk smack to each other. That's not unusual. And notably, Nate was attempting to use that to get the team more fired up, which worked.
Sure, I'm not saying that Jamie was somehow inherently out of line, but I do think if you come back into that locker room, you have to expect that level of shit talking to come with you. Like, it's not, I mean, it's 100%. Not out of place, but it's not surprising that they carry it with them. But I go on this long diatribe to say, I feel like there was a lot more emotion in that. Like, hey, you got us relegated, then actually, like, hey, here's the individual steps I'm upset with. It was just a whole barrel of things that are kind of coming out of Isaac.
It's a perfectly reasonable line for Isaac to say, in the sense that Isaac would say this. Somebody in the room would say that. It's just unfair in the cold light of day that Isaac may think about tomorrow. We'll see. I also love Jan's line, who clearly has no dog in this fight, but feels the need to say, I don't know you, but I don't like you. Gotta love the Dutch. Ted interrupts things as they start to spiral out of control and sends the team onto the pitch, while Sam gives him the just most I-told-you-so smirk, which, like, Sam, you're being a bit of a douche this season. Come on, you don't need to do that right now.
I don't know. We differ. We're on other sides of the fence here. I think that my guess is that Ted went to Sam and said, hey, I know we talked about it, but look, I've decided to bring Jamie on. Yes. Sam probably reiterated his point and said, Coach, it's your call. I don't think this is a good idea. I don't think the locker room is going to respond well. And when Jamie tries this not great apology, I mean,
it's an effort. It's an effort.
But it's not, I would not give it an A-plus effort. I think it's fair for Sam to point out to Ted, hey, man, look, I told you this. I think it's a fair thing to do.
It is absolutely fair. It is perfectly reasonable. And I absolutely agree that conversation happened off camera. However, unless Ted's an idiot, he had to know something like this would happen on day one. And it's unreasonable to think that this is necessarily going to be the vibe forever. It's Ted. It's more just a, Sam, at this moment, stop pouring salt in the wound. Of course you were right.
Yeah, I kind of expected Ted to like look back at Sam and go, "Okay, just give me, a second.
All right, like, all right, yes, obviously.
Hold
come on,
give me a little while, Sam. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Ted has patience. He knows this is a long term thing. This is an investment. Clearly, there's going to be some difficulty on day one because it's right. Jamie. Of course, there's going to be repercussions.
Led Tasso. Meanwhile,
Rebecca and Nora are at lunch in a place that I would say is clearly meant for a younger age group.
Yeah, but it looks awesome.
I was going to say this. I want to go to that little finger sandwich place.
It looks so great. If we were in London, Spencer, I would be like, look, dude, let's just suck it up and go into this place because the macaroons look dope.
No, suck it up. Give me a tiara. I want to go to this place. I want the princess experience and I want finger food sandwiches, damn it.
Now, let's see how many we can fit in our mouth.
Absolutely. Rebecca's clearly struggling with the idea that Nora is not a little girl anymore, despite this being last time we saw her. She's 12, 13. Is that how old she is?
In this, I think she's, what, they said her name, didn't they? I think she's 14.
She's on that, you know, teen, preteen kind of cusp. She's about to have her first period, yeah. So around that period. Mm-hmm. They agree to leave, and Nora drops the absolutely brutal haymaker of a line of, oh, you're not going to disappear right, for 6 years, right? Jesus Christ, Nora, she's still getting used to you again. You can't throw out that humor that fast.
I'll go get the check. Oh, you're coming back, right? What do you mean? Just wanted to make sure you didn't disappear for another 6 years. Woo, woo, hot fire.
Just punching her into the earth. Jesus. I mean, we later learned that this is just how Nora does humor, but Rebecca has no frame of reference to know that at this point.
I actually really like that about Nora. I love people who like throw haymakers like that in casual conversation, like that fourth wall breaking all the time. Building up a teat.
It's Jan, but she means to do it, essentially, is her style.
There you go. Yeah. It's an on-purpose Dutch.
Can we use that as an expression now of just on-purpose Dutch? I like that.
There we go.
At training, Ted calls Jamie over, who continues to do hip-loosening exercises as he kind of sashays over to him and says, Jamie, we're going to start you on the reserve squad. We're going to let the fellas see that you earned your spot back. Jamie, again, demonstration of how far he's come, immediately goes, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm with you, coach.
Nothing more likable than watching somebody humble and overcome adversity with their effortless God-given talents. So he's pretty cocky.
He's come farther, but he's still Jamie. We're never going to leave that behind. He's still a cocky bastard, but he's matured about it, too.
Sure enough.
Ted asks him not to try to do too much out there, but as Beard expresses, Jamie heard him, but didn't exactly listen.
He heard me? I do. Do you think he's going to listen to me? I do not. Beard's the best.
Nate, on the other hand, is just so happy that the team is going to kill Jamie, because Jamie, as we saw, was not particularly nice to him either.
I have a question, Professor.
Please.
You, in the last episode, kind of threw out, hey, it'll be interesting to see the dynamic between Nate, who is now a coach, and Jamie, who used to be his tormentor. This seems to be the only thing they give you about how Nate feels about Jamie. I'm wondering if you feel like they left something on the table there.
I was disappointed. They went a different route for getting Jamie reintegrated back into the team, really building up that Sam is possibly one of the most major characters this season and focusing it around his route. I'm a bit disappointed to see Nate's story arc left on the table in that regard, because I thought it would be an important part of him growing up. Maybe we'll get it later, but with how quick they brushed it aside and how quick Jamie's now bonding with his main adversary, Sam, I don't think we are much. And I'm a little disappointed about that.
Yeah, I got you. Me too.
Jamie proceeds to demonstrate his absolute usual skill, but notably while hogging the ever-loving crap out of the ball as he charges down the pitch.
Yep.
This leads Sam to interrupt with an absolutely brutal but perfectly legal slide tackle on him, which just knocks Jamie flying. He offers to Jamie that things have changed and that Jamie can no longer bring that weak rubbish his way anymore. Power move by Sam. Jamie is left utterly confused as to what the hell to do with that, and particularly when Colin feels the need to walk up and just pour salt in the wound. Jamie is no longer top dog, at least in an emotional sense with the team anymore, and he's clearly struggling to see people just abjectly reject him. That's a new thing to him. Rebecca and Nora, on the other hand, are walking together, and they discuss old people's love of Agatha Christie, to which I feel personally attacked to have it framed as only old people like Agatha Christie. Piss off, show.
Someone dies every 20 minutes, yeah.
Preferably in the, apparently in the audience primarily.
Oh, can we go back to that Jamie Sam thing?
Please.
I always like to point out the consistency of the show. I like that this is obviously Sam saying, boom, alpha pants right now. I'm the boss around here. Let me show this punk what's up. Goes in, hard slide tackle, stands over him with the shit talk, does not cuss.
Does
because
not cuss,
remember
to
in the last episode, he talks to
he feels guilty when he does.
Cusses, and he says, I feel guilty every time I cuss. Yeah, I just wanted to point out the consistency there. I really like that stuff.
It's a very similar gesture to when Jamie was mocking Sam when he was on the ground back in like season one, episode one, particularly with like a little head rub that he gives to Jamie when he's on the ground, indicating that the power has shifted, but it's still Sam doing it. He can't ever stop being Sam, even when he's purposely trying to be an alpha dick to Jamie right now.
Yeah. All right. Now we can go back to your AARP membership and your love of Agatha Christie.
I like old people things. Stop ragging me on it. they come to a Dolls of England display at the British Girls Shop, which I was so disappointed to look up and find out wasn't really a thing.
Yeah, shit. That would be cool, too.
I would go there. I would be deeply uncomfortable because I've never liked dolls, but it seems like to be a fascinating display. And if anything, I would love to read each of their backstories, apparently, because they sound great.
Be like an anthropological thing for me. I just go
absolutely
watch people.
Nora says she's too old for dolls now, sadly, but she's also put off by the tragic orphan stories that each doll apparently has.
And I would be too, by the way.
Yeah, this is very much like, is every one of these dolls living an Oliver Twist story and you're gonna find a good home where they can be cared and loved for now? Is that the trope they're going with this? Apparently. They agree that Americans do the historical doll concept better from their misguided sense of inherent triumph. But no one does orphans better than the Brits. And they're proud.
Your girl Rebecca needs to watch out with that.
I'm with it. It's got some truth to that line.
I don't know about that. Innate sense of triumph. I mean, we did win the war, so.
Misguided. It's always the wars. Uncle Roy and Phoebe, though, are now leaving the doll shop with Phoebe now having a fresh new doll for herself, which she politely thanks him for. As he and Rebecca lock eyes for presumably, I would say, like the first time in 6 months, right?
Yep.
We now cut to presumably that I don't know, it's weird. It's not that evening, because we get to see the two of them walking later, but I guess it's just Sam exercising in a dark room.
Yeah, he's just in a training room, yeah. I think it's still midday.
Midday. He's riding alone on his exercise bike, and when he texts his dad with a link to his photo shoot and an offer that him and his mom can have free tickets whenever they want.
Wait a second. Deal. I got the full text message conversation. I like to do this when they
please
show the phone. First off, I like to point out an iPhone. A lot of blue messages, blue
advertising
bubbles. A lot of blue bubbles going on here. All right, here it is. So here's the full back and forth. This is in a previous conversation. Sam's dad said, thank you for the call earlier. Sam said, thumbs up. Sam's dad starts this current conversation, picking it back up. Good luck against Coventry's son. Sam, thank you, Dad. Oh, and check this out. Gives him the picture and the link. Free tickets for you and Mom. You know, thumbs up emoji. Sam puts it away. Then he gets a text. Dad, did you know Dubai Air is owned by Cerithium Oil? Sam, no, meaning. Sam's dad sends him an article titled, Cerithium Oil refuses to clean up latest oil spill in the Niger Delta. Dad, to see you choose a shill for a corporation that has ruined the lives of so many breaks my heart. Okay, that's the back and forth. That's what we see on the text screen. My question for you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Spencer, is this a fair, is Sam's dad being fair here?
God, no. Dear God, it's understandable. It's a very clearly emotional issue that he's coming to this with a lot of passion and a lot of immediate reaction to it. But his treatment of Sam here really put me off. Sam clearly is being cold cocked by this. He doesn't know that this is the background. He doesn't know what he stumbled into. And Sam's dad knows that. But he's still treating it as if Sam has personally betrayed not only him, but all of the Nigerian people. This is a very what-the-fuck moment from Sam's dad that honestly heavily affects my view of him that we've gotten from Sam from one text conversation, which is not entirely fair, but it's all I got to go on.
Yeah, this is an Uncle Lee out there to the kids situation because, you know, in this, I think the better thing to do, right? Here's the advice from Uncle Lee. The better thing to do in this type of situation is to do one of two things, is to say, hey, I know you didn't know about this, but here's all of the background, blah, 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 blah. It would mean a lot to me if you would take X action. Totally fair thing to say. Mm-hmm. Two is to say, hey, actually, let's do three. Two would be to say, hey, son, I'm disappointed that you don't know this backstory. Like, I want you to be more knowledgeable about, you know, geopolitical issues that are going on in our country. Like, just because you now live in the UK, I don't want you to be disconnected from our country. Also another fair thing to do. And then number three, I think Sam's dad could very easily point out, hey, I'm not too pleased with the people you work for because they should be vetting this stuff for you. They know you're Nigerian. They should be doing a little bit of research on these companies before they throw you into a photo shoot to make sure that you're fully, you know, read in on the, you know, the issues at play here for these particular companies. I think any three of those would be at least somewhat more fair. But this particular angle of, hey, son, you've betrayed me, not pleased with it, especially in light of Ted's assessment last episode that not everybody has a great dad like Sam.
Yeah, it's a really interesting read. And I also... It's one of the things I actually don't like about this scene, that it doesn't feel it's like sufficiently set up for how important it now becomes for Sam going forward. It frames it as if this isn't something that Sam knew about at all. This wasn't Sam's cause, this wasn't something that Sam believed in, until his dad personally attacked him on the subject of it. It frames it almost in the same light of why is Jamie so good at sports, because his dad's abusive to him in that regard. And I don't like that framing for how important this is to Sam, and how good of a cause it is too, because it's important to note. Dubai Air, not a real company. Cerithium Oil, not a real company. The environmental degradation of the Nigerian Delta as a result of oil company abuse and straight-up corruption in the Nigerian government? Real fucking big issue. In real life. And one the show's now heavily going into. So, yeah, I actually didn't really like this setup for what's going to be an important plot arc from Sam. We get that, you know, he cares about environmental causes, that he wants to, you know, advertise for environmental companies. We got that last season. We know that Dubai Air is one of the main sponsors of the team, and that Sam's doing a photo shoot for it. We've got that earlier throughout this season. But it appears from this conversation that Sam apparently has never heard of Cerithium or their misdeeds, or has any frame of reference on this before. Because he just does a, no, Dad, I don't know what's going on kind of response to this. And I would have liked if this had been Sam's own cause and been built up over the last few episodes more than it's suddenly being thrown at us in this one text conversation. Which... feels like a lack of organic build-up and setup for what's going to be an important arc for the character. Curious of your thoughts, though. Did this work for you as a way of setting up what's going to be a driving force for, I think, the next three or four episodes? Or was it coming too quick, too fast?
No, I think it worked. I think we can... I mean, Sam's dad is human, and he's reacting in a emotional way that is not fair. But I think people do that. People do that in life. And when it's kind of believable for me that if he's there and he's seeing this all the time, it's super emotional for him. And so his reaction to it is not 100% rational. And I buy that. I don't like it. I want to sit here and criticize his dad for it. But if you're talking about just the general writing of the show, yeah, I bought into the reaction there.
I completely buy that. It will be important that we get some other frame of reference with Sam's dad later to get a more rounded view of the character. Because this is the only direct data point we've ever had on the man. Everything else has just been through Sam's perspective. This is all we got is this one text conversation. So it'll be important for the show to give us more so we understand him in some other different light. My complaint is not necessarily with the writing of how the scene plays out. It's the structuring of now setting up a plot arc by means of a text conversation in a dark room. I felt like it could have been more Sam's plot arc rather than the one that his dad's putting upon him just seemingly right now. But we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
Back with Nora and Phoebe walking together, one of my favorite scenes in the episode, where they're discussing the new doll that Phoebe just got and the tragic backstory that it has to have. It's modern, though. Her parents were canceled. I had an honest-to-God chuckle at that.
Pretty funny.
Meanwhile, behind them, Rebecca and Roy are talking about John, and that Rebecca notably did not dump him because of what Roy said, but because that he was right about what he said. Very important distinction. I liked that. So,
yeah, that was a Spencer distinction right there. I like that. No, you didn't tell me what to do. It just happened to be the right advice anyway.
She's complimenting him, but saying that it was her own choice, and I understand that.
I'm not saying it's wrong. It just reminded me of something you'd say.
Oh, no, I'm doing that right now. That's what I'm doing right now. They discuss the idea that Keeley's focus on banter, which is, we've discussed, is a dating app without pictures. Which, when Keeley breaks it down more, we're going to discuss our thoughts on this idea. But we'll get there.
Okay.
Phoebe brings up the idea of, Uncle Roy, can we have ice cream for dinner? No, that's dumb. You're right. Thank you for helping me to set boundaries. I love them. I love all of Roy's relationships.
This is a talk about the episodes within the episodes. You know, what we could have. You know, I would love a 30-minute episode of Roy and Phoebe walking around in the world. Absolutely. Give it to me. You know how, like, the West Wing does episodes where, like, they did the one episode that was basically like a mock documentary of the West Wing, of the characters in the West Wing that a third party did. Mm-hmm. And they just did like an hour of that documentary. I would love if this show would do that. If like one episode, we don't see Ted, Rebecca. All we see is Roy and Phoebe walking around in the world and having a day. Oh, give it to me. That would be so great.
If Trent Crim, the Independent, is creating his own documentary on the team and the players, both former and current, and doing that kind of narration while following the players, I'm down. Rebecca wonderfully sums up, wow, she really loves you. I know. It's fucking annoying. Wonderful Roy's in there. Mm-hmm. Rebecca loves that she's reconnecting with Nora, but Nora's really not interested in any of the activities that she had planned, to which Roy offers the absolutely sage wisdom that adults forget that kids don't actually need to be constantly entertained. They just want to feel like they're part of your lives. Man, is that true. Absolutely true. Something
I agree that it's true. But we are also two guys on a podcast without kids. We have some friends with kids who, if they heard us listening to this and going, yeah, that's sage wisdom, that's true, would tell us to shut up.
Absolutely. We tell them to shut up back. This is how we run. He demonstrates the wisdom of this advice by immediately offering to invite Phoebe to a podiatrist with him, to which she responds like this is him getting her the most perfect pony for Christmas. Further proving his point. That night,
I think there's also something in there that Roy is missing, which is kids also like to feel like adults.
Yeah, I think that's actually what he means. When he's saying that they want to be part of our lives, you're bringing them into the adult world. You're making them part of the adult experience. I think that's what he's going for in that.
There you go.
It's not just you take them with you everywhere. Kids look bored that quick. But you make them feel included in your own experiences, they'll be down with that shit.
The distinction I thought was maybe he was going for, they want to be a part of your lives because they love you and they want to feel that connection of being like a part of your existence, as opposed to they just like doing adult shit. So you can be like, hey, Phoebe, we're going to H&R Block to work out some of these deductions. And she's going to be like, fuck yeah, that's an adult thing to do. Let's rock on.
It's one of the things I've loved with my nieces and nephews. If I'm doing something adulting and I just include them in any way in the process and make them feel like they're a valuable part in it, they'll tell stories about that shit for months afterwards.
Yeah, they love it, for sure. It's a great point.
That night at Rebecca's place, Rebecca walks into Nora's room, and this is the only time I'm going to say this, because I feel like I'm limited to one time an episode and calling Rebecca hot, but dear God, does that shirt highlight how stacked she is. There, I'm done.
Ladies and gentlemen.
She invites Nora out to dinner, down to dinner and a movie, which apparently she cooks now. Nora offers her usual snark on the subject of that.
Popcorn.
Before then offering, how about you come and shadow me tomorrow? Follow me around my job, see what I do. It could be boring, could be very boring. Nora excitedly accepts, because she's apparently been interested in the process of running a football club ever since Rebecca started to do it. Oh, my heart. That's a sweet line right there. As much as they've been
absent from each other's lives. I don't think that's true. You know when I think she started getting interested in watching a football club and how it's managed?
Tell me, sir. I have a theory of my own.
The day that she turned on her little Amazon Fire iPad. Ooh, look at that. Taking a shot at Apple. And saw Sam Abasanya.
I'm not certain whether she has a crush on Sam or is just in awe of him, but she's clearly fascinated by him, as we see in the course of this episode.
I think that's when she got super interested. Yep.
It is still a well-meant line by Nora that clearly makes Rebecca very happy, and Rebecca leaves the room overjoyed.
I actually think it continues to show Nora's sophistication, because I think that a large part of what she wants to do is to get around the team, because there's some star power there. She's a big fan of Sam, but I think she understands that this is a nice thing that Rebecca is doing for her, and she responds in kind with a very nice comment.
Very possible. We get the return of Shannon. Haven't seen her all season, I don't believe.
Shannon.
Beard apparently couldn't wait to hand off the coffee to Ted, so Shannon has stepped in, because Beard is having Jane issues. We get a few of those over the course of this episode.
Another episode within the episode.
Shannon confronts Ted over the fact, when are they going to win a damn game? Ooh. And they enjoy some pleasant banter back and forth to clearly show that their dynamic is still going strong.
What's the word, Larry Bird?
Is it just me, or does she drop into an American accent when she responds to that?
She kind of did, yeah. Don't call me Larry Bird. When are you going to fucking win a match?
Well said. Rebecca introduces Higgins to Nora, who immediately, wonderful employee that he is, tries to hype Rebecca up. She utterly fumbles that exercise, and they move away with her eating a bit of crow.
Question for you, Spencer. You've managed people. You've had people that report into you. Have you ever had an employee try to do this for you at any situation?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely.
Did you do what Rebecca did and go, hey, what are you talking about? Or did you just kind of nod and go, okay, yeah.
Well,
Let's run.
Yeah, it was one of those nods, smiles, and giving them a thumbs up when we walk away kind of thing. I was much more on board of, okay, this is the thing that we all do when we're introduced to family members or whatever else. This awesome person I work with, they're so great. It's a customary exercise that Rebecca's apparently utterly unfamiliar with.
Yeah, Uncle Lee to the kids out there, be the rap hype man for your boss. Like, you know, like when you watch a rap show and there's the guy in the back, and like every time like a good line goes, the guy in the back is like, yeah, say that shit, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Like, be that for your boss, but pick your spots. Don't do it all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely like a first introduction kind of thing of where I do that with my employees all the time when like I'm meeting, you know, my secretary's son for the first time. I hyped her up to him, because of course you would. It's just a polite kind of thing of where I really enjoy working with this person and I want you to know that.
For sure.
Meanwhile, they go into what is supposed to be Rebecca's interpersonal sanctum, to which Keeley has completely intruded on and made it her own space, because apparently when Rebecca's not there, Keeley just steps into an office that smells better.
Least shocking thing of the episode. I just sort of assumed we all knew that Keeley was in Rebecca's office. I mean, because she's in Rebecca's office, where Rebecca's working there.
One of our first times of them actually like directly interacting with each other was just Keeley just walking in and taking off her shoes and just meshing them into Rebecca's couch. Every space is a Keeley space. You can't keep her away.
Yep.
We have her notably introduced to Rebecca as the director of marketing. Did we know that before, that she actually had that title?
I did not know she was director level, no.
That is interesting. It makes sense that she's been in on these all of inter-level meetings with Higgins, but I didn't actually know that she'd gotten that kind of promotion off screen. Kudos for Keeley.
Yeah.
They discussed the idea of Keeley now kind of working, or at least part-time, doing a side gig for Banter, which she describes as a less superficial dating app alternative, which is completely anonymous, has no photos, and offers the opportunity to offer just words and personalities. Nora's down with this idea. I'm curious of your thoughts. How popular would this be?
For men?
What a perspective you want to offer here?
Before I got married, I did these dating apps and dating websites and stuff. I'm not sure it would work too well, to be honest with you. As much as it sucks to say, I think the vast majority of people, and probably myself included, like the first thing you look at and like the thing that you really hone in on is the picture. I mean, like that's kind of where it starts. I mean, like you have to have a picture that looks pretty good, not too good, because you don't want to disappoint on the first meeting. You know, you don't want to walk in and be disappointing based on your really good picture. I just have a hard time believing too many people would sign up for this. Now, I take that back. Let me be more nuanced. I think people would sign up for it. I think people would have a hard time agreeing to meet people in person that they met on Banter, because there would be that sort of like, well, I don't know what they look like, and I could be stuck in a coffee shop with somebody I find repulsive. And I'm sorry, that's just how I think the dating scene works. So I don't think this would be very successful in practice. You?
I think it's trying to appeal to the better angels of our nature, but I agree with you that it would have some practical problems for what its chosen focus is. As a dating app, this seems like a tough sell. It's not going to necessarily get much of a clientele on there. Appearance matters quite a bit in who you choose to date and what you're attracted to. That's not necessarily superficial. That's just what you're attracted to. That's
yeah,
not
you
problem.
Do have eyes. People, we all have eyes. I will say that I want to back up a little bit here and make another point, is that Keeley is not doing work for Banter. Keeley is doing work for a venture capital firm who apparently has invested in Banter.
Correct.
And wants her
yes.
to do some PR work for it. Why do I make that distinction? Because Keeley is a big time player in the PR and marketing world.
Apparently,
in Great
yeah.
Britain, is that actual VC firms who hold the purse strings for these, you know, new projects are going to her directly to try to see if they can hype up their investment. Keeley's kind of a big deal.
Now, one thing we're not assessing is if this could appeal to certain demographics. Or people are looking for certain things. It could have a very passionate following base. I'm just wondering how big it would be. Does sound like it could be great for matching friends or matching even like pen pals kind of thing for a less intimate nature of a relationship. But we'll see how it goes. The show is clearly wanting to hype it as being the new best thing.
That's maybe what I mean. Bit. I think people would sign up for this, but I'm not sure that they would agree to actually meet up with people in person that they met on this thing in large numbers. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I also have kind of the assumption that it would appeal primarily to a demographic of people that would have a lot more difficulty making that jump to meeting in person anyway. And I don't think this would necessarily make that easier. Maybe it would, because it gives you the time to actually set a relationship that's not built based on appearances first before then you agree to meet. This seems like it's a scenario that inherently involves a lot more of investment than dating apps usually run on. In terms of the before meeting kind of scenario. While they're discussing this, because Nora's very much on board, down in the Diamond Dogs meeting, Nate has downloaded Banter. Everyone's getting on board. Probably because Keeley's encouraging them all to do so. He apparently deleted it immediately, though, because in his words, he's very choosy, but unfortunately so are women.
Aww. Wasn't that a tough one to hear? And they're pretty picky, too.
Yeah. It's a rough line.
Mm-hmm. Question for you. Who's in the office?
Right now, we've got Beard, we've got Higgins, we've got the whole Diamond Dogs that are right there.
Wow.
Motherfucker. Didn't know what you were doing there. Yeah, the Diamond Dogs have reconvened. Yeah, I felt bad for Nate here. As we've seen before, the man says this, but this is entirely coming from a place of lack of confidence. That man was chatting up that bartender and doing well in the process. He's capable of doing this, Nate. He just needs apparently a bit of alcohol courage maybe to make it happen. Ted offers that he's also not looking for anyone right now, but he kind of does this winking at the audience thing of, wouldn't it be neat if I got on that program and I just happened to meet my soulmate, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, future plot direction, maybe? Yeah. It's possible that's the direction he's kind of going in. We'll see.
So you seem to think, your theory here is that Ted is going to get on Banter.
I think him offering that kind of wouldn't it be funny if just feels like a telegraphed, this is going to happen now kind of thing. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I Ted will end up with somebody by the end of the third season. I don't know if it's through Banter or not, but I do think they're winking to the idea to the audience that they will eventually deal with Ted's romantic storyline. That is coming, folks.
Yeah, having seemingly put a bit of the kibosh in the shipping earlier on with Rebecca spitting up a biscuit at the idea of it, this is them at least throwing a bit of a life server to the shippers out there saying, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. We will be going into it. Not now.
I've still got my Ted Rebecca stock. It's taken a hit recently. I'm down like 25%, but I still got the stock.
This is reaching the levels of your Dogecoin investment. We'll see if it still holds strong later. While this is happening, Jamie walks in and, well, Higgins gets a call and the Diamond Dogs adjourn with a few little bits of yips and barking, which he has to explain to his wife as he walks away.
Hold on. One thing, when the Diamond Dogs are still in there.
Right. I skipped it. Sorry. I will do it. I skipped this line in my notes. Ted asks Beard, are you also getting on this whole Banter thing? To which he says, no, him and Jane are practicing digital intimacy, which I'd never heard that term before. Is it, you're familiar with this concept?
Yes.
Okay. New one on me. Which Jane apparently very much believes in.
How are they sharing digital intimacy?
They've linked iCloud accounts.
iCloud accounts. There it is. Another one.
Advertising.
I'm going to point it out every time.
We've got to. It's required. With the very much corporate advertising folks this episode, we've got to at least mention a few Apple a few times when they're obviously doing it here too.
Yep.
apparently Jade has some very serious views on the subject, is willing to engage in physical violence to anything that could be perceived as an indiscretion. I think we're supposed to laugh at this, but this is also in the category of things that just make me uncomfortable, so... yeah.
Yep.
So there that is. Higgins gets his call, he walks away, the Diamond Dogs yip farewell. Ted calls in Jamie. Jamie brings up the, as we discussed, absolutely wonderful idea of buying PS5s for the whole team to try to get them to love him. Ted poo-poos this idea. I'm like, no, that'd probably be a good start. I think they'd actually be down with this. I think it'd be a good gesture. Good idea.
Yes, agreed.
Is in Jamie's words, what better thing to spend money on than love? That's got a that's got legs as a kind of line, even if Ted expresses the idea that buying affection might not go over well. It will go over well with some of them. Sam would just roll his damn eyes.
He sure does thread that needle sometimes, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Ted decides that they've kind of reached the Godzilla threshold. They've reached their last resort, though definitely not to the point of calling Dr. Shannon. And so, to Beard's abject horror, he summons Lead Tasso.
Break glass in case of emergency inside. Only if you absolutely need him is Mr. Lead Tasso. The Hulk is hulked up. It's ready to go. He's ripped out of his shirt. The man is all bulgy and muscly and green. And let's do this, Lead Tasso.
This has got to be the most horrified we've ever seen Beard. I mean, he's so completely caught off guard and uncomfortable with this plan. He can't even explain it to Nate. He just kind of runs out after Ted, rapidly transforming into lead as we speak. While that's happening, Higgins is back up in the office discussing team finances with Nora, who very quickly understands that the situation they're presently in is in no way sustainable. They are no longer playing at the premier level, but they still have premier level contracts. They can't afford to continue to pay the current player salaries under their current financial workout.
They I know absolutely nothing about how this world works at all. Nothing. It just would seem to me that you would build into their contracts that if the team went through relegation, they would have some sort of pay decrease. It would seem that that would be a normal thing to do.
I think they usually do. I think they either just didn't, or it's still causing other problems. They probably lost some sponsors as a result of this, too. There's a lot of financial issues that have gone into relegation that they're now bringing up to the audience. Higgins offers this at the very appropriate moment that Sam arrives. As we expressed, Nora is clearly smitten, whether that be romantic or not, with Sam.
Yep.
Who also reveals in response to recognizing Nora, or at least knowing her by name, that he's gotten quite fond of Frozen in the meantime, because it is a beautiful metaphor for many of life's journeys, especially puberty. Thank you, Sam. We appreciate your wisdom.
So Nora was just completely, just absolutely embarrassed by.
Absolutely, 100%. Sam drops the bomb that he wants to pull out of his campaign for Dubai Air. Higgins and Keeley are apoplectic about this, completely caught off guard. But Sam reveals that his grounds are a principled stance that he can no longer even tangentially support Cerinthium in their damage that they've done to the Nigerian Delta and their abject, they're just continually piled on corruption with the Nigerian government. The Sam is too good for this sinful earth music starts to play. I love Sam's refrain there, always plays when Sam's being beatific. And Nora just continues to be in further awe of him, and Rebecca says that she's got Sam's back. Sam leaves. Higgins, immediately as is his job, focuses on the cold calculus of it. They are our sponsor, they are our main sponsor, and if we're going to do this, we've got to mollify them now. Because that would be disastrous if we actually lose them in any way. Beck apparently knows the CEO of the oil company by name, because he was a friend of Rupert's, and agrees to call him to see whether he still finds her charming. While that's happening, Lead Tasso, Mirror Universe Ted, arrives on the pitch.
Listen up, you little turd birds. If you've not stretched 15 minutes earlier, 45 minutes late, touch toes. Those your feet fingers, fellas. Come on, dummies. Touch each other's toes.
Is this just Jason Sudeikis just improvising for like 5 minutes? Is this just Maybe. What this is?
Maybe.
The actors look legitimately confused as he's going through this.
You know, touch toes. Touch each other's toes.
It's pretty nuts. I don't know. I could see how I actually wondered this about this segment. Interested to hear your thoughts. You know, we've talked in the past about how you like the dramedy aspects, right? You enjoy the drama parts of it. You love the parts that are maybe a little bit more realistic. The absurd stuff doesn't necessarily hit for you, although you do like the comedy. the abject absurd stuff does, it kind of takes you out of it. Did this fall in that bucket of absurd where you were like, you could have done without it?
Not as bad as the cartoon. Not as bad as the actual straight-up cartoon.
Well, that is like, yeah, that's our North Pole for the absurd part of the show, right? That is the worst of the worst. I agree with that.
This was in a category, we've said this a few times, this was in a category that would normally put me off. This came across as more of like an SNL skit, as something like Michael Scott would do on like The Office kind of thing.
That is a very good call. Yeah, Prison Mike.
This is, oh God, Prison Mike. I forgot about that. Yes, this is Prison fucking Mike. This is awkward. This is intentionally awkward. This is very Office kind of humor. It's not my bailiwick, but Jason Sudeikis is just so charming and the lines he's saying are so funny that even though I don't particularly like the scene, it still makes me laugh.
And there's a very transparent reason this is going on with the plot, right? It's not just silliness for silliness. Yeah, there's something that he's doing here strategically. So yeah, okay. All right. Just interested in that.
He also dunks on Tim Burton's art style, and I'm fully down with that shit, too. So
yeah, no disrespect to Tim Burton. I just don't want to see any of your films ever again.
I've seen them all. I know exactly what your film's going to be. Those trees are even appearing in Dumbo, dear God.
Somebody's got to pay Johnny Depp's wine bill. Thank you, Tim Burton.
Rebecca calls Richard on the phone. We rapidly deduce that he is a dirty old man, as we would expect from one of Rupert's friends.
Ew, what a sleaze. Good
Absolute sleaze. She knows what he is. He is what he is. He's not meaning it. It's one of those weird things. He's an abject sleaze, but it's just the way he is. So you know what you have going in.
Yeah, but my problem with this, and I know I'm cutting you off a lot. I'll back up.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
This just bugs me because when you're dealing with a woman like Rebecca, no problem. She can hold her own. She'll even banter back. I don't think she feels threatened at all. But you know this sumbitch does this with everybody in his life.
Yeah.
That's what bugs me.
That's the thing. If this is just friends talking, which they aren't, it'd be fine. But it isn't. He's just a sleaze asshole who uses his position as a CEO as a...
Can you imagine working for this fucking guy? Anyway, he seems awful.
He seems awful, and we're meant to believe he's awful, and we're going to continue to believe he's awful. That's what we need to know about this man. The show is framing it very quickly. Rebecca's used to it. It's one of Rupert's friends. She's probably put up with this for years. It's the dynamic they have. And if anything, she's trying to work it because it's the dynamic that they have. She cuts right to the case that Sam needs to back out. Sorry, wanted to warn you in advance. Wanted to see how we can work with it. Richard at first seems, Rebecca, of course, we're old buddies. What do friends do? Just have to ask for a small quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Drop the bastard. Rebecca clearly is caught off guard by that. She did not see that kind of response coming. Richard, on the other hand, just treats it as just this is business as usual and just wishes her well and hangs up the phone. Back on the pitch, we get the funny line from Led. Richard, I haven't seen a pass that soft since my high school drama teacher asked me to mow his lawn. That one took me a couple times to understand what he said there. That was funny.
Is anyone on this pitch interested in not sucking at soccer? Love it. He says soccer.
He does. A lot of the lines he throws out just get increasingly weird. Like beforehand, the just extended little rant he did on the subject of developing a relationship, building the marriage with a soccer ball, eventually just leading to an excuse to make them... It's like he's just building to an excuse to someone to question what the hell he's saying so he can make them run laps. This is very
You should do this at your next staff meeting. Just like, as if people are talking, just... smash the table. Is anybody in here interested in not sucking at their job?
No. Thank you for that advice. Appreciate this mid-management level advice from Lee. Let's add this to life lessons with Lee at the end of the episode.
Room of 20 people. One guy breaks out giggling because he's seen Ted Lasso.
It's like, yes. It would be very much that moment of when Ted came charging back in when Higgins said, Caesar, you later.
Yes.
It's like, yes. That would be the reaction right there.
This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Ted just continues to browbeat the team until Jamie cuts to the chase and reveals what Ted is obviously doing, confronting him on this just blatant Jekyll and Hyde routine.
Yep.
This is the moment Ted's been waiting for. This is the moment he wants the team to end and focus on right now. Because he immediately ends the practice, throws a fit, blames Jamie for it, and throws them all out. Notably,
Jamie just blew y'all's chance to get better.
Notably, and they get in. They mock this method, but it's Ted. It does work.
Yep.
Everybody but Sam, it seems, goes, thanks, Jamie. Kind of gives him the little respectful, thank you for taking that heat for us kind of moment. It works. It's utterly farcical, but it's Ted. It's always going to work to at least some degree. Sam, notably, continues to give Jamie the cold shoulder. Walks past him. It's a very funny moment of when Ted Led is still stomping. He's stomping. It's like he's physically collapsed into himself, even in just like his presence. Back towards the locker room, still mumbling under his breath. Beard grabs him by the shoulders and just kind of shakes him. And it's like he successfully exercised Led. As Ted comes back and says, how long was I out? It doesn't matter. You're back now. Funny moment. It's as if this is so foreign to Ted, he actually has to adopt an alter ego that controls his body while it's happening. Shannon, who can't stay shut up about this, immediately breaks down the plan as obviously you make yourself as an asshole.
Is that Shannon?
Sorry, not Shannon. Dr. Fieldstone.
There you go.
Sharon. Yes, sorry. Make yourself the asshole so that you give the team a common enemy rather than Jamie. That is exactly the plan. She summarized it perfectly.
100%.
Not clear that it's ever necessarily worked in the past. Beard and Ted are the first ones to admit this.
Well, honestly, one time at Chuck E. Cheese.
Sorry. Charles Edgar Chesterton III. Get it right. We're in the UK.
Very fair.
It almost seems like they just have more fun doing this than they consciously are aware that it works or not. They enjoy their games. While this is happening, Rebecca and Nora discuss the options that they have available. There's clearly no good solution. It's either fire Sam, which they're not going to do, or tell their main sponsor to get stuffed, which they also probably shouldn't or can't do. So what do? Nora offers her point of view that sometimes you have to do the right thing even if you lose.
Well, that's because one time she got caught chewing gum in the bathroom. All right, it's cigarettes, but I don't want to lecture.
And this is a classic example of the right thing to say, the correct philosophy to adopt. Now you got to implement it, and I feel like Rebecca skips a hell of a lot of implementation here by not immediately calling her legal department. This is the moment of where you need to personally handle this. You are the personal connection, that's the way that should play out. But the fact you don't have your lawyer on speed dial the moment you start doing things that could possibly hazard your contract with your lead sponsor is very much a dereliction of duty on her part. Well, it gets worse over the course of the episode. We'll get there. But I fundamentally agree with the philosophy. I think it's just, once you decide to do the right thing, you then need to be aware of what the costs of that are and take steps to avoid them or at least direct them.
I also think you absolutely should have your, anytime you're talking about impacting contracts of sponsors, your players, any employment contract, any contract period, you should have your lawyers or your contract department weigh in. I also think that you should have your money man weigh in, right? You should go, okay, let's play out worst case scenario.
Absolutely.
Don't fire Sam. Dubai Air pulls out. What's our plan B? How do we make this work financially? It seems like Rebecca's not taking those sort of mental steps before she takes this sort of drastic position.
Well, she's shooting from the hip, and she's got a hype man that's with it. That's the only person she's talking to. And you need somebody.
She's 14.
you need somebody to be the wet blanket. Somebody to offer like Higgins the cold calculus of, okay, let's process what the costs are. We've decided to do this. Now let's decide what the best way to go about that is. We don't get to see that as much, and I think it hurts them in the long run for the decisions other characters make in this episode.
Agree, and I will say that in Nora's explanation, she talks about how, you know, she's smoking in the bathroom with her friend, and they got caught. Now, in her explanation, she says that we got caught, and I was in the loo at the time, but I came out to basically stand with her friend, and they both got in trouble. She could have easily stayed in the loo and not gotten in trouble. This got me to the point of how they refer to the bathroom over across the pond. So it seems to me that bathroom equals toilet, right? When you're talking about the entire room, they say, I'm going to go to toilet, right? But if you're in an individual stall or on an actual, you know, like toilet seat, then they would call that the loo. So here's what I've pieced out. Tell me if I'm wrong. Bathroom equals toilet. Toilet equals loo.
I've never thought about this before until you just tried to crystallize it there before me. You may very much be right. I've just never pondered that before.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just trying to work it out.
You've rewritten the philosophy of my life, sir. Congratulations. Down in Keeley's office, Jamie walks in to find her scrambling. This is kind of that moment of where Keeley is a very good marketing director, but she did commit a fundamental misstep, as you noted kind of before in discussing what Sam's dad would react, in not really vetting and discussing the full scope of this with Sam before. This was a landmine that eventually was going to come up, and Keeley was not prepared for it.
Keeley That's on her. Should not have that responsibility. If she's the director of marketing, she should have researchers and interns under her that do this type of thing. If you're
just
expecting,
Keeley.
If you're expecting Keeley to connect these dots to large-scale geopolitical issues that might have some sort of emotional, resonance with their players, you're going to fail. That is not a Keeley job. She's never going to do it. You got to have somebody else with her.
Someone in her department should have done this. Can we agree on that point?
100% agree. Yeah, absolutely. She just, the character that we've been presented, sort of farcical to think she would ever even think through this lens.
Now, from Keeley's perspective, she landed a great client. She got Sam a great opportunity. It's going to give him a lot of revenue, everything else. She did good. That's her focus, and she did that very well. She just didn't ponder the full legs of the situation.
Yep, legs. Woo. Hey, question for you. Keeley has a life-size fat head on her wall of Roy. Two questions for you. One, did you know what a fat head was? And two, what do you think about having a life-size fat head on your wall of your partner staring at you as you do your work every day?
Did not know what it was.
Question in two parts.
Did not know what it was. Incredibly uncomfortable with the concept.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I thought. And I would be pretty weirded out by that too.
Jamie walks in, as said, and he's struggling with trying to convince the team that he's cool now, as you said earlier. Wonderful quote by Jamie. Keeley, having absolutely no time for this, starts to walk him slowly somewhere else. While in the course of this conversation, we see Jamie, as people often do when they mean well but start to feel like they're being attacked, regress. Of where he starts to go into the self-absorbed Jamie, well, if they hate me, it's clearly on them kind of shit.
It's not my fault. I'm special.
This is early season one Jamie we haven't seen in a while. And it's sad to see it. But it is, as we talked about, natural human impulses that you want to attack but are what people do. If someone gets immediately attacked when they're trying to do good, they have a tendency to immediately regress back to the reason that they got attacked in the first place. It's a natural human impulse. Mm-hmm. She leads him to the one person that could really help him with this, who's not Keeley, who doesn't have the time for it right now. Dr. Sharon.
I thought it was so funny that she just is like, walk with me. And she just sits him right down in the chair. Basically like, we pay someone to deal with this now. I am not going to do it.
She like said, this is someone who actually gets paid to listen to you complain. Sits him down. Jamie introduced the idea of, I'm just supposed to kind of blather on about myself to you. Like, yep, that's kind of how this works. Jamie's down with this concept. This is something Jamie's been looking for and didn't know existed.
That is such a funny little thing that, like, he's like, wait a second. I can just, he's so self-absorbed that therapy seems awesome to him. And then, like, you know, I'm a big proponent of therapy, as I have talked about multiple times on this podcast. I will continue to say that I think it's a great tool that everybody should take advantage of. It's just funny how different people come to it, right? How some people come to it like, I really need help, or I really trust it because I've seen it in action in other people, or just intellectually, I know it has to be a thing because it's so successful in the world. Jamie comes to it like, I get to talk about myself for an hour? Bang on. Let's do this.
You're just going to listen and I just say whatever comes to my head? This is everything I hoped for.
Such a funny idea.
It also something that I think we begin to agree would actually really help Jamie for a lot of the issues he goes through. And maybe it will. I'm not led to believe that the events we see with Jamie later are a direct product of this. It just seems like the natural progression Jamie's been going on. But I think long term, this is something that actually really helped Jamie.
Well, Doc is batting a high percentage with the group, so we'll see how she does with Jamie.
We'll see. I think it's in the evenings. The two of them are in their PJs on Rebecca's bed. Rebecca and Nora are together, collectively composing a message to Richard, informing him, with, I would say, varying degrees of politeness, of their decision, with the mutually agreed upon end signature line of boss-ass bitch, which I think is the girl power kind of tagline for a lot of this episode and some of the decisions that Rebecca makes. If I hadn't done it earlier, when I was composing this message, this definitely would have been the moment I get the legal department involved. It said, probably not having them send the message, that's unnecessarily escalating things, but getting them to vet and discuss, moneymakers too, what could happen of me saying this. Instead, she's in alone. She's in a room with just a 14-year-old composing it in their PJs. Not the kind of way you'd want the seemingly owner of a large corporation that employs lots of people doing this, but the way I'm sure a lot of them go about doing it. So whatever you can say.
Question for you, counsel. Should I end my note to the CEO of Cerithium Oil, sincerely boss-ass bitch?
Mr. Waterfield, have you ever used that phrase before when communicating with them?
No.
Is it in any way a pet phrase that they would immediately respond to and recognize well and be a sense of humor and closeness between you to otherwise mollify the nature of the rest of the email?
No, I only want to do it because my 14-year-old goddaughter told me it was a cool idea.
Okay, I want you to repeat that sentence back to yourself out loud. Maybe even write it down and then assess it for yourself. Yes.
That's funny.
I've actually had that given that advice to people before. Just repeat what you just said to yourself alone. Then get back to me. She's like, you know what? Asking me? You know.
Maybe that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. I understand where she's coming from. It's an empowering moment. She's doing the right thing. Just maybe not the best way. Soccer Saturday. Love every episode of Soccer Saturday.
Soccer Saturday.
We actually get the names of the characters now, which I didn't note before. We have Jeff Stelling. Yeah, please, go on.
Host, Jeff Stelling. Mr. Ooh. Unbelievable, Chris Kamara. Journeyman
coach. Real
person. Journeyman coach, George Katrick, who was actually the coach of AFC Richmond before your girl, Rebecca, summarily dismissed him for being A, terrible at his job, B, not a person she likes, and C, having testicles that are just way too visible, and four, my guy. That's right, Roy.
Does Roy have a personal grudge against Jeff, or does he have just no other way of expressing himself? Because good God, does he stare daggers at Jeff when he introduces him.
I honestly think that he has watched enough of these idiots do this job when he wasn't on set that he hates them all. That's why he didn't want to do it. He had no respect for any of them. He crushes it when he's there, but he's probably heard them just talk enough nonsense in the past, even maybe about himself, that he just wants to wipe the floor with them when he's there. And I am here for it. And I talk about the episode within the episode all the time. What could the show do? What other timeline could they show me that would also be entertaining that I would watch for 30 to 40 minutes every week? And this is number one with a bullet. Give me Soccer Saturday every fucking week. The dynamic. I get a kick out of it. I hope that we see more and more scenes from this particular set and Roy's interaction with these guys. I think it's fucking great.
I mean, if you want to do a great web episode thing, this just so perfectly lends itself to just be a separate thing that you also release. Even if you like want to do their own like discussions after the show kind of thing, if they did it in this format, it would be hilarious.
How great would it be if they just it did like a web short of them actually doing reviews of upcoming real soccer matches?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be hilarious.
Ah, so good. But I am also impressed with the writing of the show, right? Because they obviously set up Roy to retire at the end of the season. It doesn't make a lot of sense that he would go and just hang on in the locker room, kind of like one of those like hanger on losers. He would never going to do that. So a way to continue to keep him in the show, leverage the benefits of the character and the actor, which are both great, is they have this set. And so now every time AFC Richmond is going to have a show or going to have a game, bang, you get 5 to 10 minutes of a Roy thing. I think it's just brilliant.
It's genius. It lends itself perfectly to the first topic of conversation, the return of Jamie Tartt to Richmond.
Da, do, 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 do,
do. Do you have the quote from Roy as to on the subject? Otherwise, I can offer it. Please, in Roy voice.
Jamie Tartt's a muppet. I hope he dies of the incurable condition of being a little bitch.
I love that line. I love what it continues to, too, where Kartrick, the former manager, like, oh, say what you really think, Roy. All right, you were a shit manager, too.
Not me, you twat. I love Jeff. The back and forth. Just nice casual banter among friends.
Well, Chris loves it. Jeff, meanwhile, is just watching their fine numbers just continue to go up. It's like, language!